Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host for a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew, guys. If you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, we've got Scott Steyert, Chief Chris Noller. A shout out to our sponsors. You know, our title sponsor is Gulls at Gulls.com. Don't forget that 15% off discount code. It is Radio15. Type that in next time you go to Gulls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. And we have GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. Thanks to them, we're streaming to around 1 million followers right now on social media during the live show. And TubeBells.com, they built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. So if you want to get like the cool mug I have behind me on the table or other gear, hats, shirts, and stuff, all you have to do is go to LeoRoundtable.com, our website, upper right-hand corner. You'll see the online store. And hey, everything is like dirt cheap. When I purchase things, I pay the same price as you pay because we don't mark them up at all. So we don't make a dime. So we're just trying to get our gear out there. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich, Randy's friend, FormerLawman.com, and also Travis Shades with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Gauls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
We have not lowered our standards here, and we have a almost 30% vacancy right now, which is pretty significant. But I refuse to do that because what I tell my officers is the people we're hiring are going to be your cover for the next 20 years. They're going to be the people that are going to be responding with you. And if we just take anybody, you're going to end up with anybody kind of cover. Not people that want to be here, not people that are serious about the job, not people that have the mental aptitude or the physical aptitude to do the job. And I refuse to compromise on those things. Now, that being said, what I will say is we've had a lot of officers go to other states. In Colorado, you're required by law to check the personnel file of an officer who's worked previously in another department. That's not true across the country. We have had a number of officers leave and go to work in other departments throughout in different states, many of whom are fine officers, and really there would have been nothing for them to find in their file anyway. But there's been a few that have gone to become officers in other states, and I feel sorry for that department because there's issues and there's reasons why they were no longer here. And they don't check their internal affairs files. I think that is something that ought to be mandatory across the country, is that if you're going to hire a former law enforcement officer, you ought to have to talk to that agency, and those agencies should have to tell you about that officer's performance. But that is not the case right now.
Ideally. Agreed.
Well, I agree too. To me, that's common sense. But yeah, that's a very good point.
Well, guys, on this next one, we got two more. I'm not going to have time to go through the whole thing because we're going to have a commercial break coming up in about 40 seconds. But RVMnews.com, Red Voice Media, transgender substitute teacher arrested over a murder spree threat towards a high school. So that's going to be interesting, just kind of like to whet the appetite. A 19-year-old substitute teacher, and that is young, in Virginia, has been arrested after authorities say that he made online statements describing plans for potential attack at a local high school. That'll give you a pucker factor. Guys, stick with us. We're going to cover that in 1 second, and then we've got another one. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianceTechnologies.com, and they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they're called their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product we all know by now is called the glove has helped officers not only tens of thousands of times, but it's actually had over 250,000 deployments. And guess what? No injuries and no deaths. It's an amazing statistic. They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or a conductive energy weapon, the glove at ComplyTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Comply Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on, liability-lowering devices that's ever come along. Go to ComplyTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Chris Noller from Pueblo Police Department, and also Scott Steyer, former Green Beret and Delta Force operative. We left off talking about this is a little strange. A transgender substitute teacher arrested over a murder spree threat towards a high school. So the substitute teacher is only 19 years old, and this is in Virginia, and has been arrested after he made online threats describing plans for a potential attack at a local high school. Now, according to law enforcement officials, Hayden Dollery was taken into custody on Thursday. Investigators had received information about posts that he allegedly made on Discord referencing a, quote, kill list and a plan described as a murder spree. Now, the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office said that the reported target was John Camp High School in Aldi, Virginia, located near Washington, D.C., actually. Police said they became aware of the situation through a tip submitted through the department's Safe to Talk report app. So that's kind of interesting that they have this like civilian app to take in tips. It allows individuals to share those kinds of concerns with law enforcement. After reviewing the information, investigators moved to locate and arrest Dollery. Dollery's been working as a substitute teacher in the area, and school officials said that he was classified as a non-licensed substitute teacher for the 25-26 school year, and authorities have charged him with threatening bodily harm. He's currently being held without bond. Investigators have not released any other details about the messages beyond what I just told you, or whether they were able to confiscate any weapons when they grabbed them. Chief Noller.
Well, you talk about like hiring practices. Why are we letting a 19-year-old be a substitute teacher who's not even licensed? And I don't know how you could have completed. I guess it's possible that they're super intelligent and completed a college education sooner, but they can't have even, most likely they haven't even completed college yet. So what is it that they're able to provide to these students? That doesn't even make any sense from Jump Street. And then, I mean, obviously the threats are another problematic issue. I don't know that they do psychologicals for teachers, but maybe that's something they should look into doing.
Well, I mean, I think it's, again, just looking at the current state, especially in that area in Virginia, just from the politics, it was probably something to do with, transgender DEI hire, whatever, something to that effect. I mean, I know nobody wants to say it, but let's just be honest here. I mean, what a 19-year-old, because I said the same thing. It's like, what is so special? Oh, I know what's so special, because they want to, make it a big deal. Like, oh yeah, look, we are hiring transgender. That's my assumption, just based on history, just based on what we see in that area. So,
yeah, all right,
we'll see.
Well, hold that thought, because now we've got a massacre plot thwarted in North Carolina. I'll tell you, we've got a lot of the same places. Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Massacre plot thwarted. A North Carolina woman and a Texas teenager who was unnamed, arrested in a synagogue attack scheme. Yeah, this is like, when it rains, it pours, guys. So authorities have dismantled a chilling plot to commit a mass casualty attack on Houston's congregation, Beth Israel, arresting an 18-year-old, which is still pretty young, North Carolina woman, who was with a 16-year-old Houston boy. Investigators say that this pair, they plan to kill as many Jews as possible by driving a vehicle into the congregation. So we've got the first of the three stories involving this kind of stuff. First, ex-cop, former cop, wanted to kill black people. The second one was the transgender 19-year-old non-licensed or registered, substitute school teacher that wanted to make threats at the high school. And now we've got an 18-year-old woman with a 16-year-old boy wanting to drive a vehicle into as many Jews as possible. So Angelina Hand Hicks, was arrested on Thursday in Lexington, North Carolina, after the FBI uncovered evidence of the scheme in her home. She's charged with conspiracy to commit murder, being held on a $10 million bond. And Houston police and the FBI arrested the unidentified 16-year-old boy, charging him with conspiracy to commit capital murder. And they say, the FBI said, this is an exceptional example of when you see something concerning, you say something to law enforcement. And they make references to Schlenkler School and Israel's 78th anniversary. It was going to be very crowded. And that was why, I guess, the reason why they wanted to do it at that time for maximum casualties and that kind of stuff. But all these things, I mean, the system seems like it's working, guys. I mean, it's not pretty, but, you know, we're not doing these stories after the fact, after these mass casualties were committed. They were thwarted. So, Scott?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. It's like, with all the bad news, a lot of times, because that's just typically what's gets reported, is the bad stuff with law enforcement. Kudos to law enforcement. It just seems like I get the sense that there's the focus is maybe not on school teachers at PTO meetings and stuff like that. Like, now we're literally like focused on where the really bad people are. And we have an administration that's willing to do that, even though, if you know, it's not, you know, it's not based on political affiliation or something like that. I know I hate to sound like I'm so like humbug here, but that's how I see it. But yeah, it's good. I love it. Keep it up. These are all wins for law enforcement, and ultimately, you know, our society is much safer for it, which is the whole reason why law enforcement is there, is to keep the population safe. I think this is awesome, man. Good job on law enforcement. All the way around. And it seems like there's a good communication between the local law enforcement, between community organizers and federal. This is, it just seems like there's the communication flow is really, you know, on another level.
Yeah, I agree. I think it shows a great teamwork between the federal and local and state agencies, you know, and I think it also shows how important it is for law enforcement to be able to do that, especially local law enforcement. And there's a lot of states right now that are trying to put laws into place that are going to restrict law enforcement's ability to do that and to use technology in order to do as effective of a job. We had a bill that luckily yesterday was killed, Senate Bill 70, that would have made us apply for a warrant to look at our own flock data.
Seriously.
And you talked about the case a minute ago with the young man with the ex-officer who was on his way to New Orleans, and how those flock cameras really allowed them to locate this guy. You start putting restrictions like that on there, and then the story isn't that they got this guy. Yeah, they had to let him go and do surveillance and wait for a warrant and do these other things. But instead, what the headline is going to be is ex-North Carolina police officer shoots 13 people at a music rally. The technology, we need to be mindful about how we use it. We need to make sure we try to protect people's privacy as much as we can. There's never been a constitutional right to privacy in the public sphere. And frankly, the restricting local law enforcement use of it is going to have zero impact on how the federal agencies use it. And it just makes our job that much more harder when we can't use that technology or communicate freely with our federal partners in order to make these great kinds of arrests that you just mentioned.
Yeah, that is a good point, because I didn't know that, you know. So I think a lot of times people, like, you know, like at the state level or local level, it's more like a moral victory. Oh, look, you know, we're for privacy, which again, I am too. But to your point, it's, if it doesn't affect it at the federal level, then really, is it really helping out your privacy? And also to your point, all that does is impede law enforcement to quickly act, because a lot of times, just like in the military, when we're going after these bad guys, we had to change the way we operated so we could get out the door fast when we had the intel at that moment. Because if we waited and went through the normal old procedure of taking time and going up the chain and all this other stuff, they're already gone. So you have to be able to act quickly. You have to give the law enforcement the ability to act quickly, and you want to cut the red tape out of there. So kudos.
And I'm telling you right now, if you are carrying one of these around, the federal government can figure out where you go, when you go there, what you do while you're there. I mean, so you can't escape it.
So people not watching the show visually in your Audible podcast radio, Chief Noller just held up a cell phone, and that's what he's talking about. If you're carrying a cell phone, the feds, they can get you.
Yep.
All right. We got a minute and a half, guys. I'm going to whet the appetite with this next story. It's an update story. Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Badge gun PTSD. A Texas Supreme Court backs the DPS firing of a ranger after a school standoff. So the Texas Supreme Court, now not the U.S., but the Texas Supreme Court, they ruled on Friday that the Department of Public Safety, DPS, they acted within its rights when it fired a veteran Texas Ranger, not Army Ranger, Texas Ranger, who blamed a high-pressure confrontation at his daughter's school on his post-traumatic stress disorder. I really find this story very interesting. I know we're going to continue it after the break coming up, but the decision was authored by Justice James P. Sullivan, and it reverses actually a lower court ruling, and it shuts down a disability discrimination lawsuit that was filed by this former special agent, Robert Christopher Calloway. Now, the court found that because Calloway's condition caused him to lose control during a crisis, he could no longer reasonably perform the duties of a law enforcement officer. And I have to concur with that. It's not like an inherent right that you have, but it also puts agencies on notice. If you have a guy that suffered from these things, whether from prior military or from the department, what do you do with them? We're going to pick that up, and we're going to continue this in just a second. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, GunLearn is the first and it's the only company that offers a step-by-step program that takes you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist, like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett, actually. Now, this firearm specialist certification, if you have that, if you obtain that, even if it's 5 years old, there are some huge changes going on. So GunLearn.com, they've actually partnered with Smarter Degree and their Smarter Degree University partners, and now it's worth college credit. So yeah, that certification, a certified firearm specialist certification, is now worth college credits. And, you know, that's a big deal because they've been doing this back since 1996, and they've been teaching everything that LEOs, which is law enforcement officers, need to know about both firearms and ammunition to all facets of law enforcement. Now you can start training today, and you can learn, you can sign up to attend a live seminar, or you can host a seminar for no cost if you have your own agency. That is all at GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Chris Noller from Pueblo, Colorado, and also Scott Steyer, former Green Beret and Delta Force operative. We left off talking about a story, badge, gun, PTSD, Texas Supreme Court. They're backing DPS firing a ranger, a Texas Ranger, after a school standoff. So we've already been talking about how they made this ruling that the decision was authored by a Justice James P. Sullivan. The special agent involved, the ranger, is Robert Christopher Calloway. The court found that because Calloway's condition caused him to lose control during a crisis, he could no longer perform the duties of a law enforcement officer, Texas Ranger. Now, the case stems from a January 2020 incident. Calloway, our ranger, was on a medical leave for PTSD and alcoholism. Ouch. And he received word that his school counselors were considering detaining his daughter for a mental health crisis. So he rushes to the high school. He's armed with his DPS badge, handcuffs, and a personal firearm. Not his duty firearm, personal firearm. But he's using his work stuff. Inside a small office, witnesses said that he became aggressive. When two school district police officers get there to transport the girl to a treatment facility, his daughter, Calloway displayed his badge, threatened to arrest them for interfering with his rights as a parent. One counselor reported that she had never been so afraid and feared for her life during the outburst. And it doesn't get much better. He later admitted his PTSD sometimes takes over, leading to less than optimal outcomes, described his behavior at the school as a fight or flight response where he chose to fight. Now, former DPS director, Colonel Steve McCraw, who made the final call to fire this guy, testified that while he empathized with Calloway as a father, the agency cannot overlook the misuse of authority. And here's a quote saying, a DPS officer has an obligation to control their emotions when they get there, plain and simple. McGraw stated that during the discharge hearing that we cannot afford to have a trooper, a special agent, or even a Texas Ranger that cannot control their emotions. And while Calloway argued that his firing was discriminatory under the Texas Labor Code, the Supreme Court pointed to a specific provision in the law. Justice Sullivan noted that disability protections only apply if the condition does not impair a person's ability to do their job. And goes on to say, DPS cannot give someone a sidearm and a badge, send them out to handle stressful interactions with other Texans, and then have that officer snap under pressure. The court further noted that Callaway's actions created a grave risk of blue-on-blue violence by threatening fellow workers. It said that the ruling acknowledged he had 16 years of service and the toll of the job took on his mental health, but ultimately concluded that he was out. The court dismissed all remaining charges against the department. There you go. Chris, why don't you take this one first? I'm looking at Scott and I'm saying, Chris, I'm sorry about that. But yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Chief.
The good news is I can't tell where you're looking. You know, I think obviously we can't in this profession or really even in the military have individuals that can't maintain their composure while armed in stressful situations. It's just a recipe for disaster. I think that in addition to that, you have the potential criminal acts maybe that this DPS employee may have done, menacing, interference, you know, a couple other things I could think of, at least, you know, here in Colorado, that he could have potentially been charged with, that even taking out the what could happen in the future element, there may have been enough to fire him just based on those actions. You know, it's obviously unfortunate. This job does wear on people. It does have an impact on everybody who does its mental health to one level or another. But there's a way to get help. There's a way to get help and stay in the field. But you can't make actions like this and expect that to be what happens.
Yeah, I agree totally. And kudos, you know, anytime an agency takes care, you know, basically handles discipline within the system, like they're the ones making the call. It's not like they're, you know, somebody's half from the outside having to tell them, hey, you need to do this. It builds confidence from the public, you know, like, hey, they're policing their own. You know what I mean? I think it's important. Like, obviously, I think this is a no-brainer. That guy cannot have a gun. He cannot do his job anymore. On the flip side of that, I have seen PTSD in my profession, and I you know, as long as there is a pathway to get help and the officers know that, because you know, the flip side of that is like, hey, this person goes out there, he serves his country, he serves his community, he gets PTSD because of what we ask him to do. And then as soon as he gets it, it's like, okay, we're going to throw this guy away. He's worthless now. Right. Like that cannot happen because, you know, they've sacrificed so much. A lot of times that, you know, their families are crap, you know, their marriages are crap. And so it's like, hey, give these guys a way to get better, which I'm assuming there is. Chief, you had mentioned their organs. So, you know, and I also realized this too. That individual has to take the steps themselves. You know, the old adage, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. It's the same thing. Like, as soon as they identify, if he identifies he has problems, he needs to be proactive and he needs to have the support structure and infrastructure to get the help and then assess it from there. But certainly if somebody has PTSD at that level, yes, they cannot have a gun. They cannot be expected to do the job because that's going to could lead to something far worse. And now it's national news. And now it's, you know, it's way worse than what it should have been. And then now the police look like, you know, they have a black eye and there's so much good that police do every day. You don't want something like this coming in and taking away all the good they do, you know, every day, the majority of what they do. Right.
So, you know, Randy Sutton deals with this with the Wounded Blue, the woundedblue.org. And we support them. I know that at Tampa, my last 6 years on working with the union, we had a guy that we took from the military. The whole issue was is that the department felt that he had lied on his application because he did not disclose the PTSD issue that he had. And I'll tell you, behind closed doors, I saw this guy breaking down, wigging out, and his voice changing, crying, just like I would not trust this guy with a gun. I did not think that. Anyhow, I mean, what do you? You know, what if they, you know, hiring guys that have PTSD, I always think that is such a liability for an agency. If you're hiring someone that's coming to you prepackaged with that issue, I would say, man, look,
we're not even
allowed that liability. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not even allowed to ask.
Yeah.
That's wrong. That's wrong.
If you get them, check the retirement package. I mean, when you go hire with an agency, you can clearly find out whether like with us, with Tampa, if you're an officer, if you're a 1-year officer, 6 months or whatever, if you can do a disability retirement out, whether it's for like PTSD and other issues, and get 65% of your pay tax-free, which is about equivalent to making full pay. You know, there are agencies that will take care of you that, but not all agencies do that. So, and obviously after you have your 10-year vestment on, things kind of change where you can actually retire without having a disability and doing a disability retirement out. But yeah, just make sure, you know, we have a system in place to where we try to get you back to where you can get back on the job. But even if we can't get you there within a year, then we have to offer you that disability retirement out. But
we do something similar. But I mean, you know, as far as going back to the idea of hiring somebody that's already been diagnosed, we are not even allowed to ask that question.
Is that a state thing in Colorado, or?
I don't know is the honest answer. Our HR will not allow us to ask those questions. So I'm assuming it has something to do with ADA. American was with
Disabilities Act of 1990. Yeah, that's a 1990 act. But I think
that's crazy. I think that's crazy because it has to be in that situation, it has to be dependent upon the job in which they're applying for. I mean, mm-hmm. It's not like I understand that if that has no effect on some type of job where they're not, you know, where they don't carry a gun, where they have to be in stressful environments, where they're going to see stuff that might trigger them to go back to where they were. I mean, it's crazy to me. I understand that having that law, but they need to just, you know, it's not like it shouldn't be like a blanket thing. You know, it should be a case.
Well, and I, you know, I guess if there's varying levels of how severe PTSD is.
Sure.
And at least having our psychologists know that, be able to ask some questions and determine, yeah, they've got some issues, but there's things we can do, you know, with them to keep them a viable candidate and they can be successful on the job. But we can't even ask the question. So our psychologist doesn't even know unless they tell them in the interview.
Wow. Well, it's been, and we're cutting it. We're winding it down. Thank you guys so much. Chief Chris Noller from Pueblo, Colorado, and also Scott Steyert, former Green Beret and Delta Force. And you know, this is a very interesting topic. We could actually go on for this for a while. I think it, at least once an agency becomes aware of that potential problem, now you're wearing that leadership hat and you got to make those liability decisions. And it's kind of like incumbent to kind of like, you gotta protect yourself and your agency. So I get it. I want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Please support Randy Sutton and those guys for what they're doing. A shout out to our sponsors, guys, goals.com, compliantechnologies.com. We have gunler.com, mymedicare.live, safeguardrecruiting.com, and twobells.com. Thanks for the support. We'll see you back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern, live.